Let's open our Bibles up to the book of Genesis. If you would please turn to Genesis chapter 29. We did leave off last week with Jacob fleeing for his life as his brother had promised to, next time he saw him, he was going to kill him because Jacob had, I guess he didn't pull the wool over his father's eyes, he pulled the goatskin over his father's eyes in the deception that took place regarding Esau's birthright. And it starts off with where he started heading north. In the Bible, it kind of calls it east because east is nothing but desert. So when you try to go east, it kind of naturally just takes you on a northeasterly journey. But it says he went on his journey and he came to the land of the people of the east. And so he starts off down in Beersheba, which is in the Negev. And he goes past the place of Haran where his Abraham had spent, and he stayed there in Bethel, where he saw the angel open up, and there was a ladder with the angels on it, or heaven open up. And he went up to the ancestral home, I guess you could say it was, of his father's family. And he looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks. A huge stone was on the well's mouth, and all the flocks would be gathered there, and they would roll up the stone from the well's mouth and water the sheep, and then put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. You know, it was to keep it clean and keep people that weren't, you know, water is a very precious thing in that part of the country, and so they didn't want to have it stolen or somehow spoiled. And Jacob said to them, "My brethren, where are you from?" And so they said, "We are from Haran." Or if you see the R there in the New King James is in italics, so literally they say, "We from Haran," you know, and that's kind of the level of sophistication, I think, that we see from this area. And they said to him, "Well, do you know," or he said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And I think our concept of the Middle Eastern shepherd has been somewhat skewed by our third grade Sunday school quarterlies. You know, we get this idea of the shepherds as being really nice people and just somebody that you would want to invite home for dinner. And not saying that they weren't, but the typically they were not the cream of society. They were skeptical and untrustworthy, untrustworthy. And they weren't necessarily, oftentimes they were kind of cutthroat. You know, it was just kind of a society, a culture that just kind of lived on the streets, lived on the edge kind of a deal. And this is where he's come to. And so these people are looking at this stranger and, you know, they're not knowing what to think about him. And so he says, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And it's kind of interesting. I think it's somewhat ironic that the name Laban means white. And we'll see the irony of that later. So he basically, his name was Whitey. So we've had Hairy, you know, Esau, and then we had Slick, who is Jacob, and now we have Whitey, Hairy, Slick, and Whitey. And so here's their response to him. You know, Laban, the son of Nahor, and they say, "We know him." You know, like, what's it to you? And so he said to them, "Is he well?" And they said, and notice that "he is in italics, they said, "Well." You know, I mean, they're not giving anything up at this point. But they're starting to kind of warm up a little bit as he's, you know, showing a good southern hospitality to them. And they said, "Look, his daughter Rachel is coming from the sheep." And then he said, "Well, look, it is still high day, and it's not time for the cattle to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go feed them." You know, it's kind of like here this guy has come in. He's an out-of-towner. He's a foreigner. He doesn't know this area, and he's walked into this place with these other shepherds, and he's trying to tell them how to herd sheep. He's trying to tell them how they should be taking care of their livestock. But what he's trying to do is get rid of them. You know, he wasn't really trying to tell them what to do as much as he was just trying to move them away so that he could go talk to this daughter who was the son of Laban. And they said, "Well, we can't until the flocks are gathered together and they have rolled the stone from the well's mouth, and then we water the sheep." And so while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came from her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his brother's mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Laban went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. You know, he probably went over to the stone. This would have been a big, heavy stone, you know, covering over the mouth of the well was basically, you know, don't think of like the cowboy movies with the well with the little roof over it and the crank and the bucket on the end of the rope. You know, it was just, there's a hole in the ground. And they would slide this rock back and forth over it. And it was pretty heavy. It was not a one-man job, but Jacob was going to show her it was a one-man job. You know, probably rolled up the sleeves of his robe before he went over there, and he just kind of, you know, got the pose and flexed his biceps and everything, and macho man, you know, and he's rolling this stone away, seeing if Rachel is looking. And then, it says in verse 11, Rachel kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. I mean, you think she was a little weirded out? I mean, this, you know, here's this total stranger goes up to you, grabs her, does the whole Valentino thing with her and lays a big wet one on her and then starts crying. You know, little creepy, but it wasn't like that. I mean, it wasn't like that sort of a expression. It was just, this wasn't a Hollywood kiss. This was a Middle Eastern kiss, you know, that they would just the peck on the cheeks. And when he saw that she was a relative of his, that God had blessed his journey in the same way that he had blessed his grandfather's servant's journey many years earlier in the same place, it was just too much, and he started crying. And so Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son, and so she ran and told her father. And it came to pass when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and he kissed him. You know, it wasn't the Valentino thing. It was the typical peck on the cheek and brought him to the house. And so he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." And so he stayed with him for a month. And Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing?" You know, I mean, being a good house guest, when Laban would go out into the fields during the day, Jacob would get up and go help him. You know, and he's just working and kind of getting room and board out of it. But Laban's thinking, you know, he's a good worker. He knows this way around the livestock. I don't want him going off someplace else. I don't want him, you know, putting his resume on the internet or something. So I'm going to just make sure that I can keep him here. So he asked him, he said, "What should your wages be?" And Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. Now, we've probably all heard this story before. We're familiar with it, probably heard teachings on it many times in the past. And, you know, my New King James says that Leah's eyes were delicate. The New American and the New International both say that her eyes were weak. And that leads some commentators to say something disparaging about Leah's looks, that she was plain or that she was homely or something like that. And I don't know necessarily that that's what's being said. You know, this was a culture where their skin was dark, their hair was dark, and their eyes were dark, and that was considered to be very beautiful, to have light-colored eyes. She could have been blue-eyed. You know, it could have been something that may be somewhat beautiful in our culture, but in that culture, to have light-colored eyes was not very attractive. You know, it's kind of interesting how different cultures in different places, in different time periods, view beauty. You know, like, for example, the Maasai tribe in southern Ethiopia start lip stretching on their young women at a very early age, and they'll cut the bottom of the lip, and then they'll start stretching it. They'll insert gauges in it and keep making it bigger and bigger, and the goal is to one day to be able to insert a very large and very decoratively painted plate in your lower lip, and that's considered to be very beautiful even today. Girls in Thailand, for example, they begin wearing gold neck rings at the very beginning of puberty, long before puberty, in fact, and as they age, as they're growing, more rings will be inserted in order to give the appearance of very elongated necks. And what I've read about it is they say the necks don't really get long, it's just their shoulders get lower. It just kind of pushes their shoulders down after a period of time. But you can look at the picture and you can decide. That's considered beautiful in Thailand, in rural Thailand. Teeth filing also in Thailand, usually begins on the outset of adolescence, when they first hit, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old. They begin filing their teeth. And their standard of beauty is to have the sharpest, pointiest teeth around. And that's their goal, and that's considered to be very beautiful. And of course, in primarily in Africa, but in different other cultures around the world, what's called scarification is considered a mark of beauty. And the incisions, they'll make these incisions on their face and body, usually with sharp knives or cut glass. And they'll take the, this is something that's very painful and takes a long time to do. I mean, this something like this would take very many years to do. Because you have to do a little bit, then let it heal up, and then do a little bit more, and then heal up. And when they have the open sore, they'll rub either ashes, charcoal, or gunpowder, if that's available. They rub that into the wounds to get this very raised scarring, which is called keloids. And that's considered very beautiful. So I don't know what this is actually saying about Leah. You know, sometimes I think we might give her appearance somewhat of a bad rep. But you got Leah. You got blue-eyed Leah, and then you got Rachel, and the only thing said about Rachel is that she was had a really good form and appearance, which is the Hebrew word for that is hubba hubba, and it means all of her places were in the right place, all of her pieces, and so it says now Jacob, verse 18, loved Rachel, so he said, "I'll serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter." And Laban said, "It's better that I should give her to you than I should give her to another man." And so he says, "Deal, stay with me." Now, this was approximately 1686 BC. You know, I know that's and I emphasize the word approximately. But, you know, he started crossing off the days and then the weeks and then the months and then the years of his calendar. And it says, so Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. Let me read that again. Just make sure everybody's paying attention. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. That seems almost the opposite of the way we view it, isn't it? I mean, we'll say, "Man, I'm just so in love. We've got to," and then whatever it is, you know, "we got to get married. We got to move, because after all, the world's passing us by." And in our culture, our view of love is that it's very passionate and it's very impatient. It's got to happen now. But 1 Corinthians 13 says that love is patient. The very first characteristic of love is that love is patient. You know, I think that we would normally think of love, the opposite of love being hate, but I would think a better, when we talk about biblical love, agape, when we're thinking in those sort of terms, the opposite of that would be selfishness. You know, whereas love is selflessness, the opposite of that would be selfishness. And selfishness is impatient. You know, lust is impatient. But what Jacob had for Rachel was love. And his love was so deep and so pure and so true to her that even though he had to work 7 years in order to get her, it just seemed like it was a day or two. And so Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled." I mean, patience does have its limits, you know. And so he says that I might go into her. So here we're about to 7 years later, so we're about 690 BC, and Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. And it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her into... It came to pass in the evening he took Leah, his daughter, not Rachel, his daughter, but Leah, his daughter, and brought her into Jacob. They went into the wedding chamber of the tent, and he went into her. You know, there weren't any lights in the wedding chamber, no need for lights. And so... it says that Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. And it came to pass in the morning that, behold, I think it's the NIV, drops the word behold. I think the word behold should be there. You know, it came to pass in the morning, behold. You know, it's sunlight now, and there's light coming into the tent. And it says, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, "What is this you've done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me? And check out what Laban says to him. I think we could read over this. We could pass over this too quickly. But check this out. Laban says to him in verse 26, it must not be done so in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. I wonder if Laban was getting in a little gig here on Jacob because of what had happened with the goat skin and the venison chili or the venison meal that he had given to his dad before he left. And so here we have, you know, Jacob's name means heel catcher. And metaphorically it means a con artist or a deceiver, somebody pulling an angle, working a game. And Jacob had just got Jacobed. Jacob had just gotten Jacob. And he says, it's not so that we would do so in our country where the younger would be given before the firstborn. So he says in verse 27, fulfill her week, and then we will give you this one also for the service which you will serve with me still another 7 years. And so he's got to work another 7 years to get Rachel. And by the time he's done, the wall of his tent is already wallpaper with calendars, you know, as he is working again to but he loves Rachel and she's worth another 7 years. And so Jacob did so and fulfilled her week, and he gave him his daughter Rachel as wife also. And Laban gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel. So he'd given Zilpah to Leah, and he gave Bilhah to Rachel. And whenever I think of Bilhah, you know, the name, and I have no idea what it means in Hebrew, but I just, the name Bilhah, you know, me Bilhah, me make good children. You know, I kind of think of some, I'm probably wrong, but so he gave Bilhah his daughter Rachel as a maid, and then Jacob also went into Rachel, and he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban still another 7 years. Now, a question that I get asked from time to time, and I don't know about quite often, but I get often enough where people will ask me, when they look at these examples of polygamy, of multiple marriages in the Bible, specifically the Old Testament, and they'll ask me, how come that's wrong? I mean, they did it, all the guys in the Old Testament did, and how come we don't allow polygamy in the 21st century? And, you know, what they would do in those days is they practiced what you could call parallel polygamy, you know, where they would take all their wives at one time, and they would have several wives at the same time, parallel. We do the same thing. We just practice serial polygamy, though. You know, you have one wife, doesn't work out, dump her, get another one, doesn't work out, we get another one. I don't know that there's really any difference between the two, and neither are what God's design for marriage originally was. But admittedly, it was practiced at this time period, and God didn't zap them with lightning bolts. I'm not quite sure why. I know this wasn't God's design, and I think we could all agree on that. But it says in verse 31, then the Lord saw that Leah was unloved. If you're reading the original King James, it says God saw that Leah was hated. Probably an overstatement, but trying to contrast the view between Leah and Rachel. And so he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. You know, he took mercy, he had pity upon Leah, since she was the unloved one of the duo. And so he closed up Rachel's womb and opened Leah's, and she conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben or Rubain, which means yo, a son. You know, I mean, maybe she was thumbing her nose at her sister when she did this. I don't know, but she was just, you know, it's behold, I got a son. For she said, the Lord has surely looked upon my affliction. Now, therefore, my husband will love me. You know, thinking that because she had a child, then that would cure things between her and Jacob. That's a common misconception. I mean, I even deal with this a lot today where there's marriage problems, and I think, well, if we just have a kid, then that'll give us something in common. That'll be something that draws us together. And really, all that does is just provide a tug-of-war rope for the parents. You know, the kids become that rope. And it just gives them another thing. If they can't get their act together before the kids, it makes it much more difficult when the pressures of parenting come in. And so she conceived again and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he therefore has given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon. And the name Simeon means heard. And so the Lord heard that I was unloved, and so he did this. By the way, you may read some commentators that take the sequence of the names, the birth names of these people, and put them together into a statement about God's plan for Israel. Play with that if you want to. I think that's probably square peg, round hole kind of a thing, but might be worthy of a side trip anyway. And so 34 says, she conceived again and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him three sons. Therefore his name was called Levi. And Levi means attached or joined. And so, you know, Leah 3, Rachel 0. And so she conceived again and bore a son and said, now I will praise the Lord. And so therefore she called his name Judah. And then she stopped bearing. So she had the fourth son, and the name Judah means praise. You know, the word jubilation comes from the same root that we have in English. And when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, then Jacob envied her sister, and she said to Jacob, and we see a whole lot of drama queening and drama kinging throughout this whole time period, you know, guys and gals both. But she goes up to Jacob and she says, give me children or I'll die, you know, kind of a thing. And Jacob's anger was aroused against her. And he said, am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? You know, Jacob's saying, I'm working okay. I got four sons, you know, so the problem must be on your side of thing. And, you know, I think this is what she says to him. You know, she's like putting this responsibility upon him that you need to do something to fix this. And she was looking to Jacob as being her supplier. And I think when we, there's a tremendous folly that comes when we look to our spouse, whether it's our husband or our wife, when we look to our spouse and expect him or her to provide that which only God is supposed to supply. Because our spouse will always disappoint. Our spouse will always leave us hanging dry at some point. Even the best of, even husbands like me will sometimes disappoint their wives, you know. So it's just when we try to put on our spouse that which God intends to provide, we're looking for problems. And so she said, here's my maid Bilhah, go into her and she will bear a child, you know. And just Bilhah will get it done, and so she will bear a child on my knees, which I think is literal the way that things were done then, that I may have children by her. And we remember the whole story with Ishmael and Hagar. And so she gave him Bilhah, her maid, his wife, and Jacob went in her. And Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. And Rachel said, God has judged my case. He has heard my voice and given me a son. So therefore, she called his name Dan, which the name Dan means judge. Danielle means God is my judge, you know, just judge. You know, here is my maid Bilhah, go into her. We've kind of been here before, haven't we? I mean, that's exactly what happened with Hagar and Abraham. And so Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, with great wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister. It's a competition thing, you know. She was down 4-0. And so now she's come back with, or 5-0, or 4-0, yeah. And with great wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and indeed I have prevailed. And so she called his name Naphtali, which means wrestling. So she's starting to kind of gain back up on her sister now. And when Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she said, well, two can play this game. And so she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob, his wife. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. And Leah said, you know, because the handmaiden's children would be the considered to be the children of their mistress and master. And so Leah said, a troop comes. And so she called his name Gad, which is the meaning of the name Gad. There are some who say that it can also mean good fortune. Lucky, you know. So we got, what do we got? We got Harry, and we got Slick, and Whitey, and now we got Lucky. And so she called his name Gad. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. And verse 13 says, then Leah said, I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed. And so she called his name Asher, and the name Asher means happy. And now Reuben went in the days of the wheat harvest and found mandrake. Now Reuben's just a little boy at this time, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old. And he's in the field and he found some mandrakes. And he brought them to his mother Leah. But then Rachel looks over and sees the mandrakes that Reuben has just brought to Leah. And she says, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. And she, meaning Leah, said to Rachel, meaning her, is it a small matter that you've taken away my husband? Will you also take away my son's mandrakes also? And Rachel said, therefore, he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes. In other words, I'll give you some mandrakes, but he's mine tonight. Or Rachel said, you can have him tonight, but I'll take the mandrakes. Mandrakes back in the Bible times, in fact, even still today in some cultures, their nickname was called love apples. And this is why, because they're a tuber, they're a root plant, and oftentimes they will grow and they will look like, in fact, there's some that look like men and some that look like women. And so they were oftentimes used in fertility rites and so forth. And so, you know, she says, give me some of your love apples. And she said, well, I'll give them to you, but, they're given to me, and then you can have him tonight. And so in verse 16 says, when Jacob came in out of the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come in to me, for I have surely hired you for my son's mandrakes. And so Jacob's like, okay, you know, and he lay with her that night. And then God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. And Leah said, God has given me my wages because I've given my maid to my husband. And she called his name Issachar. And the name Issachar means there is recompense. Or I have, you know, because I hired out my husband. Or I hired him through the wage of the mandrakes. There is recompense. And so his name is called Issachar. And then Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment, and now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons. And so she called his name Zebulun, which means dwelling. And by the way, before we get too far into the story any more further, I think it's kind of important to know that there's at this point, there's really nobody walking with God. You know, this is a much removed from the days of Abraham, and Jacob had his encounter with God there in Bethel, but we don't see any example of him praying to God or serving God or building any altars or anything like that like his grandfather had done. And as we look at it, as we go into the story, you'll see it kind of unfold anymore. I think oftentimes Leah gets kind of a considered as a lowly status, but if there's anybody, if there's anybody that we could say Christian in the story, it's her. She seems to be the one that has the more of a spiritual bent than anybody else, at least at this stage of the game. And so it says, afterwards she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah, which is the feminine form of the word judge, you know, Dan. So if we were, you know, if you had a, if a guy named Dan had a daughter today and wanted to name, you know, wanted to be a son so we could name him Junior, but she's a girl, so he would name her Danette. It would be the same thing. Dinah would be the equivalent of Danette in our culture. And then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. And so she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. And the name Joseph means Jehovah has added. So finally, Rachel herself has a son through Jacob. And it came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you. Let me go, for you know my service which I have done for you. So he just, you know, finally he's thinking, oh, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be back down there. In the south, in the land that was given to my grandfather. And so he goes to Laban and says, let me go home. And Laban said, please stay if I have found favor in your eyes, for I have learned by experience the Lord has blessed me for your sake. And he said, name me your wages and I'll give it. The phrase I have learned by experience, the New American Standard says, I have divined, and the New International says, I have learned by divination. You know, I don't know what this is saying, really. I don't know exactly. You know, Laban's not a God-fearer. He doesn't worship Yahweh. I don't even think we could say he would be monotheist. And so what exactly he's communicating in this, I'm not sure. He's just trying to say, I see that God has blessed me because of your presence. Whether he was giving God the credit for that or one of the other members of his pantheon, who knows. But Jacob said to him, you know how I have served you and how your livestock has been with me. For what you had before I came was little, and it increased to a great amount. And the Lord has blessed you since my coming. And now, when shall I also provide for my own house? And so Laban, he said to him, well, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, nothing, don't give me anything, but if you'll do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep your flocks. But let me pass through all your flocks today, removing from there all of the speckled and spotted sheep and all the brown ones among the lambs. And, you know, any of them that weren't white, in other words, which was the desired color. He said, let me go through and I'll call out all of them and the spotted and speckled ones among the goats, and these will be my wages. So this was the recessive gene in the animals, and so definitely would be the minority. You know, I mean, most of the goats and sheep would have been white, and that's the way they were bred to be. And so the speckled and spotted and brown were considered to be less preferable. And he says, and these shall be my wages. So my righteousness will answer for me in the time to come when the subject of my wages comes before you, that everyone that's not speckled and spotted among the goats or brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it is with me. You know, he says, so when it's time, you know, let me do this for a period of time. And then when it's time for me to go, you check my flocks, my herds. And if you see any white ones in there, then you can just accuse me of thievery. And Laban says, oh, that it were according to your word, which in Hebrew means this guy is more of a rube than we thought. You know, I mean, he's thinking, why would he make a deal like this? You know, I mean, Laban's saying, okay, let me pray about it. Yeah, I'll do this. And he just jumped right on it, you know, and thinking that that was really he was going to get over on him. And so he removed that day the male goats that were speckled and spotted and the female goats that were speckled and spotted and everyone that had some white in it, all the brown ones among the lambs, and gave them into the hands of his son. So this is Laban that did this. Laban went around and he called out all of the brown and speckled and everything and then gave them to his sons. And he put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, you know, 30, 40 miles. And then Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. So when he goes into Laban's flocks to find the brown and the speckled and the spotted ones, they're all gone. And because Laban had taken them. And so Jacob took for himself rods of green poplar and of the almond and chestnut trees and peeled white strips in them and exposed the white which was in the rods. Remember what Laban's name means? White. He says, and so I exposed, he says that he did that and he exposed the Laban which was in the rods, which probably means nothing. I just think it was kind of cool. And the rods which he had peeled, you know, he just peeled the bark off of them, and then they were, these particular kinds of trees had a certain kind of wood. And he set before the flocks in the gutters and the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink so that they should conceive when they came to drink. So the flocks conceived before the rods, and the flocks brought forth streaks, speckled and spotted. And then Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the streak and all the brown in the flock of Laban. But he put his own flocks by themselves and did not put them with Laban's flocks. You know, I have studied this for almost 40 years. I can't even begin to count the number of commentaries that I've read to try to understand exactly what's happening here. And I've forgotten more than I can remember of what all the commentaries didn't say, because every guy had their own opinion. And everything from superstition to supernatural to coincidence, all of this, no one knows. But it's kind of interesting to me that the word conceive that we see there in verses 38 and 39, that word conceive, it's the Hebrew word, you can't speak Hebrew on a dry throat. It's the Hebrew word, yacham. And it comes from a primitive root meaning that means hot. And you know, whether that means that they, I don't know what that means. But somehow this kind of played into it. Did the rods, that the sticks that he put in the drinking water, was there something that happened with that that stimulated the reproductive glands of the female, of the ewes? No. You know, I don't know what happened, except God was in charge of this. You know, that's what happened. God wanted it to happen this way, and so it happened. And it came to pass that whenever the stronger livestock conceived, this is verse 41, that Jacob placed the rods before the eyes of the livestock in the gutters, you know, in the water troughs, that they might conceive among the rods. But when the flocks were feeble, he didn't put them in. So he's doing a little survival of the fittest kind of animal husbandry here. And so only the stronger ones were reproducing. And so that the feeble ones were Laban's and the stronger ones were Jacob's. And thus the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks, female and male servants and camels and donkeys. So even though Laban tried to get it over on Jacob, God has intervened. Don't be thinking at any stretch that this is all due to Jacob's connivory. He's conniving. But the only reason that it's happening is because God is blessing it. And we'll talk about that more in a minute. And Jacob heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob's taken away all that was our father's. And from what was our father's, he acquired all his wealth. And so Jacob saw that the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable toward him as before. You know, he's picking up on their negative vibes. And so the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you. You might want to understand that. Now, for him to do this, though, it's like some guy going into a large stakes poker game, cleaning up, and then all of a sudden his mother calls and says he's got to go home. You know, I mean, you don't do that. I mean, you don't go in and win all the money and then leave, you know, and not give the guys a chance to get it back. And this is kind of what they're viewing Jacob as doing here. And so Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field to his flock. And he said to them, you know, he can't go back and schedule this going away party like Laban had said he wanted. And he said, I see your father's countenance, and it's not favorable toward me as before, but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father, and yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. But God did not allow him to hurt me. So, you know, we saw the one example where Laban did this, but according to Jacob, this is happening 10 times. And if he said the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flocks were speckled. But if he said the streaked shall be your wages, guess what? They were all streaked. And so God has taken away the livestock of your father, and given it to me. So it was God that did it, not the sticks in the water, okay? And it happened at that time when the flocks conceived, that I lifted my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the flocks were streaked and speckled and gray spotted. Or if you got the old King James, instead of gray spotted, they were grizzled. And, you know, Jacob is saying that this dream he had was kind of an inspiration for what he did with the sticks and all of that. And he says, then the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, here I am. And he said, lift your eyes now and see. All the rams which leap on the flocks are streaked and speckled and grizzled, gray-spotted. For I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land, and return to the land of your family. You know, this was God's way of sometimes, I mean, you know, he had turned the countenance of Laban and his sons against Jacob, and they were jealous of him, and there was all kinds of bad vibes between them. And this is God's way of moving Jacob on. You know, he I don't know that it was really God's will that he stayed there the whole time. You know, he said, well, what's your wages? And he gave him a job, made him an offer he couldn't refuse. And so he stayed there and worked for a long time and got rich. He probably would have gotten rich if he had gone down to Canaan in the beginning. But God in his grace blessed this. And so God is using this contention between Jacob's family and or Laban's family and Jacob to get him to leave. And it's not like God made Laban and his sons not like Jacob. You know, not saying that. I mean, it's like they were going along, oh, Jacob's an okay guy, and then God zaps him, and no, Jacob's not an okay guy. He wasn't making them do something that was against their will. God doesn't do that. But I think it's just an example. The way this is all working out is this is just a beautiful example of the orchestration of a sovereign God as he interacts in human events. And so seeing the end from the beginning, he was causing all this to work out this way. And then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, is there still any portion? So he's saying, you know, we got to go while the going's good. And so they're thinking that he has to talk them into it. And their reply to him is there any portion of it or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us and also completely consumed our money. Whatever dowry we would have had, he spent it, going whatever. And for all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. And now whatever God has said to you, do it. So what they're saying is God has given you all of our father's wealth that should be going to us. So we're with you, you know. So if God said to do it, we're in it. And so Jacob rose and set his sons and his wives on camels, and he carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gained, his acquired livestock which he had gained in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. And now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols which were her father's. The word household idols here is the word teraphim, and it was probably some small figurine, you know, something like this, that was an image of one of the balls or something like that, you know, some pagan image of some kind, and it was probably some kind of symbol of preeminence or birthright that would, if at some point that he tried to disinherit her, if Laban tried to disinherit her, she would have this to show that, you know, it was kind of like a birth certificate kind of a thing. It was that, and it was probably kind of, you know, if you remember back in the days of the St. Christopher's on the dashboard, you know, just kind of a good luck thing that people would have. And it was kind of viewed like that. You have this teraphim on your shelf in your house, and everything goes well for you. It's kind of like if you go into some of the predominantly Catholic emerging countries, you'll see that there's a lot of that sort of thing going on. You know, like here, if you've ever been to the Philippines and you see the jeepneys, which are their form of mass transportation, and they're just very elaborate, very gaudy in their decoration, and they'll be covered with all kinds of Christian sayings, like, you know, Jesus saves or God is great or something like that, and they don't mean anything by it other than the fact that they think that it'll bring good luck to them, and that's kind of what this was. And so she had, and by the way, if your God can be stolen, time to move on in the directory to another god, you know. That's not really speaking very highly of your choice of deity. And so Jacob stole away unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. And so he fled with all that he had, and he arose and crossed the river and headed toward the mountains of Gilead. And so here we saw Jacob's journey to the northeast earlier. Now we see him making his way back to the land of Canaan, but he comes to the hills or the mountains of Gilead, and he stops. And if you've ever been to Israel, you know, we don't go there because that's in Jordan, but you see right across the Sea of Galilee and across the northern part of the Jordan River, and it's a very lush, green, rolling hills, cattle country. I mean, it's a very lush farmland. And so he's coming, or not farmland, but grazing land, and so he's coming back. He sees this place, and he kind of hangs out there because it's good grass. And Laban was told on the third day that Jacob had fled. And so then he took his brethren with him and pursued him 7 days' journey, and he overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. So Jacob had a 3-day head start, but Laban caught up to him on the seventh day. And God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, be careful what you speak to Jacob, neither good nor bad. I can understand God appearing to him at night and saying, you better not say anything bad about my boy Jake. You know, I got my hand on him. I can kind of get that. I don't really understand why he said, don't say anything good about him either. You know, just don't even talk to him. This is what he's saying. But Jacob says, so Jacob overtook, or Laban overtook Jacob, and Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mountains of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, what have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with a sword? Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? For I might have sent you away with joy and songs and timbrel and harp. You know, we'd have had a big old going away party if you just let me know. And you know what? And I believe that Laban probably thought that was true. He was probably thinking that he had really been violated then. And if Jacob had only come to him and just said, okay, it's time for me to go, he would have given him a big going away party. I think Laban really believed that, because the most effective con artists are the ones that believe their own press. You know, and I think that was probably true of Laban. He probably thought that's what he would have done. And he goes on to say, you didn't allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters, and now you have done foolishly in so doing. My sons and daughters of the New King James, that, in other words, his grandchildren, you know, the descendants, the children of Leah and Rachel. The NLT says my daughters and grandchildren, and the NIV says my grandchildren and daughters. I'm not sure why the reversal of them, but he says, now notice this. God has appeared to him and said, whatever you do, don't go messing with my boy. And he says in verse 29, he says, it's in my power to do you harm. You know, he's probably hitching up his belt here and spitting, you know, just trying to get a little bit of man thing going on. He says, it's in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night and said, don't do that. Well, then in whose power was it? You know, Laban's saying, I could do it if I wanted to, but God said not to, so I'm going to choose not to, is what it sounds like. And he says, now you have surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house. But I get that, Jake. But why'd you steal my gods? You know, I mean, I need my gods. I depend upon my gods. My gods provide for me. My gods keep me safe. They keep me secure. Why did you steal my gods? And you know, again, what kind of gods can be stolen? And so Jacob answered, and he said to Laban, because I was afraid, for I said, perhaps you would take your daughters away from me by force. You know, as I'm thinking about it, I just, you know, you haven't done me right so far, so you would have probably just said, these are my daughters, not your wives. Get out of here before I hit you in the nose. And so with whomever you find your gods, don't let that person live. In the presence of your brethren, identify what I have of yours and then take it with you. For Jacob didn't know that Rachel had stolen them. So he's just saying, you know, look, if you find your gods here, you can take them back home and let them provide for you if you want to, but we didn't take them. And so Laban, where'd he go first? He went to Jacob's tent, then into Leah's tent, and into the two maids' tents, but he didn't find them. And so, you know, his men are going in and, you know, pulling out their doors and turning them upside down and doing all this like they do on the TV shows. And it says, when they came out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent, but Rachel, verse 34, had taken the household idols and put them in the camel's saddle, and then she sat on them. And then Laban searched about all about the tent, but didn't find them. The camel's saddle in the New King James and any of the modern translations, in the Old King James, it was the camel's furniture. You know, I guess 17th century, they thought they had this big lazy boy laying up there on top of the camel or something. But they didn't find him. And so she said to his father, because the only thing that hadn't been searched now was the furniture on top of the camel, and she's sitting on top of the furniture. And so she said, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise before you, for the matter of women is with me. And he searched but did not find the household idols. So she's saying, you know, if it's okay with you, Dad, please don't make me get up because I'm in my monthly cycle. And so, you know, you couldn't ask that of me. And so Laban's like, no, you know, and he didn't want anything to do with that. And, you know, I want to say this with all due respect to all the ladies that don't do this, but many women have been using that as an excuse ever since. And I know I need to qualify this because, you know, there's some that do and some that don't, but they might try to prove to me that they're not those that do by ripping out my heart one vitricle at a time. And so Okay, most women don't do this, but some do. Okay? None of the women at Calvary Chapel do this. They would never do that. None of the people on the podcast. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that maybe sometime, somewhere, there may have been... Rachel did it, okay? She's the only one ever. That's the only time that's ever been done in all the history of femininity, okay? Now, verse 36. Jacob was angry, and he rebuked Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, now picture this scene. You know, what is my trespass? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued me? Although you have searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren that they may judge between us both. And then his voice is getting louder and louder, and he's getting madder and madder, and he's getting all up in Laban's grill, and he's so mad, he's kind of spitting, you know, and Laban's blinking. And he says, these 20 years I've been with you, your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young, and I have not eaten the rams of your flock, which, you know, at night at dinner time, he said, I didn't eat your sheep, I just ate mine, you know, which would have been his right to do so, but he just said, I never did do that. Was torn by beast. I didn't bring it to you. You know, I didn't say, oops, lion got it. I just bore the loss of it. You inquired it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. And there I was. And then he's getting really dramatic now, you know, back to the drama king thing. In the day the drought consumed me and the frost by night and my sleep departed from my eyes. Oh, woe is me. Thus I have been in your house these 20 years. And I've served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock. And you have changed my wages these 10 times. And unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely you would have sent me away empty-handed. Now God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night. You know, I think if Jacob had known, I mean, he's feeling pretty righteously indignant now. Yeah, he'd been wronged. But if he had known the whole story, probably wouldn't have had these last several verses, you know, if you'd known really where the God was. And so Laban answered and said to Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and this flock is my flock. All that you see is mine. But what can I do this day to these daughters or to these children, their children whom they have borne? So therefore, you know, okay, they're mine, but, you know, who's going to, you know, make an issue out of this? So now, therefore, come, let us make a covenant with you and I, and let there be a witness between me, you, and me. And so Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar, just like he'd done at Bethel. And Jacob said to his brethren, gather stones. And so they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there on the heap. And Laban called it Jagar Jahadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. You know, that's probably why Hebrew won out over Aramaic, you know. Laban speaking Aramaic. Gleed, they both, actually both of them mean heap of testimony. They both have the same meaning. And what they're saying as they are making this line of demarcation there in the mountains of Gilead, okay, you go across this line at your own peril. God can't watch you, but I can watch you. All right? I mean, I can't watch you, but God will watch you. And so if you mess up, it'll be known to me. That's kind of what they're saying in this covenant that they're making. It's a very tense peace treaty, if you will. And Laban said, this heap is a witness before you and me this day, and therefore it was called Galeed. And also Mizpah, which means watchtower. You know, today they got the Mizpah rings or the Mizpah necklaces that are, you know, boy and girl get them, and just half of it's on one part and the other half's on the other part, and you put them together and make a hole, and it's all nice and romantic, and they take it from this passage. But this wasn't some sort of a love fest they were having right here. This was actually a sign of division. And he says, it's also called Mizpah because may the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent from each other. And if you afflict my daughters, or if you take other wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is witness between you and me. And then Laban said to Jacob, here is the heap, and here is this pillar which I have placed between you and me, and this heap is a witness. And this pillar is a witness that you will not pass beyond this heap to, I will not pass beyond this heap to you, and you won't pass beyond it to me for harm. 53, God of Abraham. Now, this is, notice this is Laban saying. He says, the God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, and the God of their father judge between us. And Jacob swore by the father of, by the fear of his father Isaac. That's kind of a cool name for God, isn't it? The fear of his father Isaac. And there Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain. First time we see Jacob doing so. He offered a sacrifice there, and he called his brethren to eat bread. And they ate and stayed all night on the mountain. And then in the morning, Laban went home, kissed his sons and daughters, blessed them, and then Laban departed to his place. Question. As we look at this story, who's the good guy here? I don't see anybody that was doing right. You know, I mean, there, it's just, it's all about what can I do and what can I get and how can I scheme and what's in it for me. And I mean, the whole thing is that way from start to beginning, or from start to end, or from end to beginning. Your choose. But yet, God is blessing this. Why is that? I mean, what was it that caused God to continue to give his grace to this guy named Jacob, this guy named con artist, when he, even after he declares to be a God follower, he still pulls all these pranks? Why is it that God appears to endorse it in his grace and in his blessing? And the only way I can answer that is this, because it's the same reason he does it with me or with you. You know, sometimes I see these guys on TV and I get so angry when I hear the falsehood that comes out of their mouths, and the healing line thing and all of that sort of stuff just really aggravates me. And I wonder, you know, and then I get a testimony. I got a really good friend that he was miraculously healed. I told you the story of Mark Neely. He was miraculously healed on one of those healing lines when he was about 5 or 6 years old. He was crippled, and he threw away his crutches. Why? I mean, why would God work through somebody that taught false teachings? Because he's a gracious God, that's why. And I'm not more worthy of his grace. You're not more worthy of his grace than anybody else. Jacob wasn't more worthy of his grace than Laban. He's not any less worthy than you and I are. God is a gracious God, and grace means getting what we don't deserve. And I think that's a cool thing. Let's pray. You are a gracious, good God, Lord. And we just, as we come to you tonight, we thank you for the lessons that are in, even in this story, when we see so much connivory and smoke-filled backroom dealings, and yet you're still in charge. Your name is still to be praised. And your will is still seen. And so, God, we praise you tonight, and we bow before you, and we pray, Lord, that we could walk in your grace in a manner that is worthy of the name that you've given us. As we see next week, Jacob's name will be changed, and Lord, you have given us a new name as your children, and we pray that we would just walk in a way that is worthy of that. As we pray in your son's name, amen. Yeah, Roy.